From coast to coast and around the world, you are now walking with spirit. Hello, everybody. I'm Monique Chapman, your host, and thank you for joining us for an hour of personal and metaphysical growth. Each week, Walking with Spirit explores different topics from the mundane to the mystical with stimulating guests from all over the world who share their knowledge to uplift consciousness. Tonight, we have author, intuitive, and spiritual life coach, Cynthia Sue Larson with us, and she is the goddess of reality shifting. Her latest book, titled Reality Shifts, When Consciousness Changes the Physical World, is available now as an ebook, and you can get that by visiting her website, www.realityshifters.com. If you'd like to be a part of tonight's program, speaking directly to Cynthia or asking a psychic question, because she's psychic also, the phone lines are open. You can give us a call toll-free at 877-876-5227. Again, 877-876-5227. And we also encourage you to email your questions to spiritanswers@walkingwithspirit.net, and your questions will be answered in real time on the air. Now, a bit about me for our new listeners. I'm an intuitive consultant with 25 years' experience. I've helped thousands of people, from stay-at-home parents to corporate executives, make their invisible dreams visible. I utilize my gifts and I touch into the past, present, and future, eliminating the fog and paving the way for clarity. I work with Eastern, Western, African, and Caribbean methodologies, in addition to being a board-certified hypnotherapist, Reiki master teacher, and ordained minister. I am available for private consultations in the areas of prosperity, business, career, dreams, life path, relationships, personal growth, negative energy removal, and manifesting techniques. I achieve success by blending intuitive wisdom with pragmatic action. Allow me to assist you in turning your life around. There's no need to suffer when I'm here to help. Log on to my website, www.healing-visions.com, or walkingwithspirit.net, or give me a call today toll-free at 888-240-6057. Now, my guest tonight, besides being a very, very good friend, Cynthia Sue Larson, helps people tap into the extraordinary powers that lie within them to create their best lives and find out how good it can get by transforming from accidental manifestors into conscious reality shifters. Cynthia's first nonfiction book, Aura Advantage, How the Colors of the Aura can help you attain what you desire and track success in your life, and her Aura Healing Meditation CD can help you feel your best, do your best, and understand the energies that are around you at all times. Cynthia's also penned an adult novel, a young adult novel, entitled Karen Kimball and the Dream Weaver's Web. And this is a real thriller, and it talks about a 10-year-old girl who comes to terms with her psychic power as she solves a dangerous mystery at swim school. Cynthia has received high acclaim from Dr. Larry Dossey, Edgar Mitchell, Lynn Robinson, and Fred Allen Wolf. She's a popular guest on TV and syndicated radio shows, and she holds a bachelor's degree in physics from UC Berkeley. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi, Monique.
Hi, welcome to Walking with Spirit.
Oh, thank you. Such a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you here with me tonight in this wonderful heat, so I thank you for not melting. Well, let's start out by talking about exactly what are reality shifts. You've done a lot of work in this area, so why don't you bring the audience up to speed on your concept here?
Yes. Well, most of us are familiar with that situation where we set something down in the house and then we walk away and we come back to where we know we put it, and it's not there. And either it shows up exactly where we first looked later on, or it seems like it's moving around. It shows up in a really bizarre place, and no one possibly could have put it there. So I'm just describing this as an example so that you get a sense of it.
Okay.
Often a lot of us have synchronicities. Things just seem to happen right when we're thinking of them. Sometimes there are spontaneous remissions of disease and so forth through prayer or positive thinking. And all of these different situations basically represent a very central concept, which is a reality shift. And that is, my concept is that these different things are all embodiments of thoughts and feelings changing the physical world, which is not at all unexpected from the physicist's point of view.
Uh-huh.
So it's basically any kind of appearance, disappearance, transformation, transportation, or a change in the way we experience time, and that is what a reality shift is.
Okay, so how does the time shift fit within the reality shift? Because, well, I've noticed myself, and this is just my personal observation, that to me time is speeding up tremendously. And I hope it's not speeding up because I'm getting older. but you know, if you do, you know, milestones like birthdays or even the holiday time, it seems like they're coming around quicker.
Yes. Well, that's part of the aspect of relativity, of the way time seems to move in relationship to ourselves and how busy we are and so forth. So that's definitely a kind of reality shift. The type that I tend to describe on the website and through my newsletter is the sort of reality shift where it takes a lot less time than usual to drive a regular distance. Like someone might jump on the road to go a drive that takes about 2 hours usually, but somehow they get there in half the time and they were not speeding.
Uh-huh.
So that would be a time-related kind of reality shift, and lots of people have written in with those sorts of stories to the realityshifters.com website. And then another one would be actually feeling that you are communicating in a different time, that you're making a connection to someone in the past or in the future.
Okay, well, why don't you share with us a story or two about what you're talking about?
Okay, one story like that happened one day when I was just a normal everyday day with my daughters running back in and out of the house. They were young children at the time. And I could hear my daughter just leave the front door open. That happened a lot. I always said the front door, but somehow it got left open. And I could hear that there was a car driving into the driveway, not ours, but some other car. It was just very slowly crunching on the gravel in the driveway. And then it sounded like it stopped. I didn't go outside to look. But then I could hear it rolling away again. And then my daughter came running in and said, Mom, why is it that our friend is leaving? He just got here and he's leaving. And I said, I don't know. And then within about half an hour, our friend arrived again, but this time driving a completely different car and, you know, dressed differently, according to my daughter who saw him. And this is an interesting story because in that car that she did see him first driving in, and I heard it. I didn't see it, but I could hear it in the gravel, you know, in the driveway. He said that he'd been to the house, and he felt like there was someone there, but he could tell that we weren't there. And so he just he had a telepathic kind of communication with my daughter, and then he just left because he figured we weren't there. He remembered, oh, they're not home. So he'd actually visited us on a different day. And I know that sounds weird, except there are stories throughout time when people have walked backward in time, and some of those stories are on my website, Reality Shifters. Some are very famous, such as the teachers that walks back in time to the palace at Versailles, to the time of Marie Antoinette. And they were not believed when these school teachers stepped forward and said, this is what we saw. Some people thought they were crackpots or lying or something, but I can tell you they're not lying. These sorts of things do happen. And it's definitely a kind of reality shift. It may not be that common, but once again, it's not outside the range of what's possible through physics.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, do you think it's maybe more common than the average person is willing to admit?
Definitely. In fact, this is really exciting because one of the things that's happening in this year in 2006, it's a big news story. It has to do with physicist Stephen Hawking. He's proposed something called top-down cosmology. And this is related because I'll skip all the fancy physics, but what he's talking about really is that there were an infinite number of parallel universes coexisting at the time of creation at this Big Bang, and that our present time is being created by a kind of handshake from the future to the past. We're always creating it, and according to his theory, his postulates, what he's expecting to find is that we will have traces of several realities, several universes coexisting in this one at any time. These are exactly the kind of reality shifts that have been reported for years at realityshifters.com. And this is what physicists will now be looking for to guarantee and verify that this theory of his is correct. So this is a chance for Stephen Hawking to win the Nobel Prize in Physics, which he's never done before. Right. And the reason he's never done it is because usually he's so far ahead of the pack that nobody can test his theories. This is the first one that looks testable. And I'm so excited because this is the first one that we'll be showing that the kind of things that we're seeing with coexisting realities, coexisting universes, that's pretty much what we're talking about with reality shifts.
Yeah, well, you know, that is really exciting. And, you know, I have guests like you, you know, different guests each week on the show. And next week I'm going to have a gentleman on. His name is escaping me at the moment, which is really scary. But he wrote a book, and in his book he talks about the book of Genesis and interpreting that, although he doesn't call it interpretation, and his name is Kevin Smith, and this is, and he talks about how there are parallel universes and how things truly came to be if you pay attention to the specific words in the Bible. So it's interesting how this information from this physicist is coming forward, Kevin Smith's information is coming forward, and it's up to the public. We can decide to take it and embrace it or just, you know, ignore it, but at least it's being presented to us. It's no longer hidden from us.
That's right. And I think you mentioned my book, Reality Shifts, When Consciousness Changes the Physical World.
Uh-huh.
I definitely do cover the entire concept of those parallel universes right there in the Reality Shifts book, because along with all sorts of examples of reality shifts and...
Okay. Well, why don't you give us, you know, talk a little bit more about your newest book and what we can expect to find in it. Because, you know, I got the copy from you. Thank you very much. And it was absolutely fabulous and fascinating.
Yes. Well, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Yes, I wrote it so that it's not one of those dry physics books. It's just one of those things you read before falling asleep, and that way, you know, you can doze off more easily. Actually, it's pretty riveting. And I'm not just saying it because I wrote that, but I spent a long time just getting it to the point that it conveyed the information, but did so by mixing a good blend of stories, real-life experiences with parallel universes,
uh-huh.
and the concept of the holographic universes, and showing how that can be, and what this means to each one of us, and how we can live with this, with all these parallel universes that we are experiencing at all times. So... the idea in the book is to first start by providing just an overview of what is a reality shift, and I did talk about that.
Uh-huh.
It really raises the question, what's reality? How do we construct it? Because we actually are constructing it. And then what can we do about the situation when we experience several concurrent realities?
Uh-huh.
What does that mean for our relationships? What does that mean for our personal life? How does that influence what we're trying to do with our lives and what we're trying to create? So all of that is part of the book, and I find it to be essential reading for anybody that's interested in manifesting, because if you don't really understand that anything is truly possible and that you can just kind of dial in or tune in a particular universe, then people often are limited by the beliefs that they have. They don't mean to be limited, but when they believe that only so many things are possible, that, for instance, it's impossible to instantly heal a broken bone, that limits their ability to experience a broken bone being
right.
instantly healed. And I have worked with clients that have had broken bones instantly healed. So I know that these things are possible.
Uh-huh.
And I think reading the book is exciting because it gives people a sense of what is possible. It sounds like fiction at times, but those of us, and I know you, Monique, I know you've experienced reality shifts.
All the time.
And I bet that most of the people listening have at least experienced a kind of reality shift where they set those keys down and then they come back and they are not where they thought they were.
Mm-hmm.
So even if that's so far the only reality shift that the person listening to this program has experienced, it's really a good first step, because just opening your mind to the possibility that these things can happen really helps in terms of experiencing more.
Yeah, I liken it to the old radio dials when we used to have to literally turn the dial to find the station, and sometimes you'd have to, you know, play with it a little bit, moving it to the left and to the right to tune it in just right. But boy, once you tuned it in, it's crystal clear.
Yeah.
We're speaking this evening with Cynthia Sue Larson, and she is the author of many books, the latest of which is entitled Reality Shifters, or Reality Shifts. And you can find this book on her website at www.realityshifters.com, along with her other two books and her meditation CDs and more information about the work that she does. Cynthia, you know, I wanted to play a little game tonight, if that's okay with you. Oh, and by the way, if you guys want to call in, give us a call at 877-876-5227, toll free. Wanted to play a little game. I noticed on your website you had a top 10 list of top 10 ways to shift reality.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and I'd like to, you know, do it kind of like David Letterman style with, you know, the top 10 starting from 10 and coming down to the most powerful way to shift reality. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Okay, cool. So the first one is, well, number 10, is to choose your attitude. Now, how can we choose our attitude?
Okay, well, that's a great question, and it really has to do with what I call miracle-mindedness. That's a term that, well, I like the way Carolyn Miller used it. She's got a book called Creating Miracles, and basically she said that when you're fearless, you have good intentions, innocence, and invulnerability, then that is a perfect attitude for getting to that emotional response to your environment where you can, kind of, like we were talking about, dialing in that radio, just tuning it in. So I think a lot of people are familiar with the Abraham teachings. That's really popular right now. And that concept of feeling, that's pretty much what we're talking about here, too, just that by meditating and getting oneself to a place of feeling love and relaxation instead of stress and fear, it can totally transform the life experience.
But Cynthia, how can we really let go of that fear? You know, I mean, everybody says meditate. I preach it too. I'm a meditation teacher, among other things. But in your words, how can someone really let go of that fear so that they can just settle down and be so that they can create?
Yeah. Well, I would always recommend meditation, regardless what the person's spiritual, religious leanings and beliefs might be. But I think what you're really getting at is some people have sort of a block or a mental block against meditation.
Uh-huh.
They think, and I've heard all of this before because I work with people too. There are lots of misperceptions about meditation. One is that you have to sit in the lotus position with your fingers in some kind of a mudra, you know, some of them pointing in different directions, with eyes shut, sort of chanting some kind of some, you know, the mantra, whatever.
Well, you know, I did that once, and it took me 3 days to get up, so I tried not to do that again.
3 days to what?
It was very painful.
Oh, no. Well, yeah, I was, as you know, of course, Monique, people don't need to meditate like that. There are
exactly.
So many different ways. I like to, I've got an article on my website, Reality Shifters, that helps people pick the best meditation for them. It's a free article. And how do you pick it? Well, you put together one of your favorite ways to mentally relax with one of your favorite ways to physically relax that you actually have time to do. And driving a car is not the best time to meditate. I've done that and gotten tickets, so you know I can personally attest to the fact that's the wrong time to meditate.
Okay.
I was lucky not to get in an accident. So it's just best to do the meditation when you're able to have some time to yourself. It can take at least 5 minutes, preferably more like 20, but if all you have is 5 minutes, that's okay. You can actually walk and do a walking meditation.
Uh-huh.
And then you can combine the you can sit and do a meditation. You can stand. Breathing always helps, nice, slow, steady, deep breathing. And then whichever kinds of mental relaxation techniques work for you. So I have a meditation CD to just help it make it really easy for people. So because when there's music in the background, it's soothing, and then a guided visualization, it takes all of the confusion out of figuring out what to do next. So, but basically, there's so many possibilities. Some people that worry a lot do best to do a mental clearing exercise where they just watch their thoughts, observe them, and then observe them just like sweeping them out of the room, keeping their room of the mind clear.
Uh-huh.
That's a really good one. Sometimes the mantra or the affirmations one works really well for people. Some people do well, you know, just to do sort of a guided meditation like what's on the CD that I have. It depends.
Okay, so it sounds like what you're saying is find out what works for you and just do it irregardless of what anyone else is saying.
That's right. And if people feel like I'm doing it, but I can't tell that it's working, it is working. I can guarantee that. Sometimes the effects don't show up instantly. But if you're meditating on a daily basis for at least 5 minutes a day, you will start noticing effects definitely within a week, and extremely strong ones within a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And if you can spare the 20 minutes, the effects are that much more pronounced.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing how it's difficult sometimes for us to take 5 or even 20 minutes to work on ourselves and create our future. We're so busy worrying about what the future's going to bring, we don't take the time to actively create it in the moment.
That's right. And it's something that we need to keep in mind, that if you're always in the reaction mode, react, 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 then that doesn't really give you the opportunity to succeed and to pursue your own dreams.
Right.
But you're just putting those fires out all the time. So
okay.
Good to, yeah, thank you.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Okay, let's go to number 9 on our top 10, and that is to let go of wishes. Now, we want a wish, don't we?
Oh, of course. And I think the letting go part is often where people get stuck in constantly wanting. You'll hear people say, well, I just want to have a job that I like. I want a man in my life. But when they keep themselves locked into that longing, it's really an emotional state of mind. And when they feel every second of every day that it's just always outside their grasp, just, you know, at their fingertips but a bit beyond, that's called hanging on to it and not really letting it go. So just like they say, a watched pot never boils, it's that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
We really need to turn our attention to something else. And there's a physical reason for doing that, actually. It does get into the physics of the observer effect. What physicists notice with quantum particles, that when we're staring at them, not necessarily with our eyes, but we've got some sort of a particle detector set up,
uh-huh.
then it forces the particles, which are, quantum particles are both waves and particles, they're sort of forced to be particles, and they do not have the freedom to do their little wave dance and make that quantum leap to sort of a new phase state. So what we need to do with our wishes is to do... Do you remember that scene in Mary Poppins where Jane and Michael Banks sing a song? You know, it's that thing where they go, you must be kind, you must be...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Very sweet and fairly pretty. You know that
song? Uh-huh.
Okay, well, if you remember in the movie, Jane and Michael Banks, they somehow... this gets delivered to their father, who has his own idea about what's going to be happening here. And so he tosses their list into the fireplace. So Jane and Michael think no more of it, like, oh my gosh, it's ruined. You know, their wish has been tossed away. But what happens when it's let go is it sort of floats magically up the chimney and then, of course, flies through the clouds and lands directly into Mary Poppins' hand, which he takes as a summons.
Uh-huh.
And I just think it's great, because that is such a perfect description of what happens. And like when we blow candles out on a birthday cake, we release the wish to spirit.
Uh-huh.
When we blow dandelion seeds and make a wish, we release the wish to spirit. There's so many old ways of making wishes, and all of them have in common the concept that you just let go of it rather than hanging on. And so... that release, that letting go, it does tie in with physics. It does tie in with a lot of ancient traditions and just ways of making these wishes. And it's pretty much the most important thing you can do once you've clearly stated what your wish is. And
okay. Well, that kind of leads right into number 8, which is visualize what you desire.
Exactly.
Now, do you have to be visual? Do you really have to see it in your mind's eye?
No, you don't, and I'm glad you asked that question. I know there are lots of various opinions. Some people say that visualization is everything, that you really need to get it in your senses. And there is some truth to that, in the sense that because when it gets a person more emotional, then it's really helping. But the truth, in my experience, and with the clients I work with, it's, if you can get very excited and worked up just about the question of really wishing that you could know how good your life can get, or really wishing to bring a certain quality, which is kind of ephemeral, very etheric, it's a difficult quality to express, but it's one that you need. Like, for example, you want more confidence. You don't know what that looks like, but
uh-huh.
you're just wishing for it. The more feeling you can put into it, the better. And so the visualization is good to get specific about, to the point that you're able to get emotional about it. And if you can get very emotional about the most generic, broadly stated visualization, which is like, how good can it get, or how can it be the best for all concerned,
uh-huh.
those are pretty broad sweeping ones. I recommend them because they have no bad karma to them. Those are my favorite kind of wishes, because they genuinely work in the best interest of all concerned. They're genuinely open-ended, so that you don't regret what you wish for. You know,
uh-huh.
be careful what you wish for, you just might get it. So being specific is good. and just take it to the point where, and you know when you're excited. You get that feeling of goosebumps, that rush of energy.
Yeah.
That feeling of joy, of kundalini rising. So that is the place where it's happening. And however specific you need to be to get that, that's where to go.
Okay, great. Now the next one, number 7, is a bit interesting to me, and it's feel non-locally interconnected. Wow. Explain that one to us.
Okay, once again, it's got its roots in physics. I tend to do that with all of these.
Well, I mean, based on who you are.
But I'll make it easy.
Okay.
So the idea with the quantum interconnectedness is the fact that all quantum particles are known for the fact that they're able to interact with quantum twins, with, you know, quantum twins particles.
Uh-huh.
That's, in fact, the basis for quantum computers right now. And what's happening with those quantum particles, if you use your two thumbs and one's pointing up and the other thumb is pointing down, that's representing two little quantum particles which are currently situated. So one has a spin up and one has a spin down. When quantum physicists first noticed it about 100 years ago with an experiment, that as soon as one particle switches, the one that was pointing down suddenly is pointing up, at the exact same moment, its twin flips from the other position to its opposite, simultaneously. This is why Albert Einstein called quantum physics spooky action at a distance. He was talking about this. Okay, so that happens miles apart. Those quantum particles have been tested in cyclotrons and so forth, where they really have a large space, and it's just been astonishing to see that consistently, reliably, these little tiny particles are as if they're connected, but there is no connection. Nobody can find a mechanism that connects these things. It's like they know that they belong together. Well, now, let's just jump up to our human scale of things and recognize that in our body, we have billions of cells, and each one of those cells has, you know, just once again, the body is just full of billions of molecules, billions of atoms. And then we're talking about an astonishing, staggering, mind-boggling amount of quantum particles.
Uh-huh.
And so that is, in fact, a little bit of a clue as to the fact that how can we be connected to someone else. Energetically, when we're thinking about someone else a lot, we're strengthening that energetic, harmonic connection between us and someone else. And we can do that, too, with what we're wishing for. So what this means is that we're never alone, and this number 7 on our top 10 list of how to shift reality, this means that we can feel non-locally interconnected to everything and to everyone that loves us and that we love, and that sometimes we can feel this when we feel inexplicably happy or sense that we're thinking of someone. And those of us who are intuitive, those of us who are psychic, we make very good use of this interconnectedness, and we know how to work with it with our clients.
Uh-huh.
And so just developing that ability to get that sense of being at one with everyone, it's very empowering. And I think it helps people just to realize that they're not all alone. You can kind of lift people out of a depression or feeling sad or sorry.
Okay. So now we're down to number 6 on our top 10 ways to shift reality, and that is reverse negative self-talk.
Yeah.
You hear about it all the time. You know, I read someplace once that the average human thinks about 66,000 thoughts a day, and 64,000 of those are negative. So can you imagine if we could just change 1%?
That's right.
Where our life would be?
Oh, my gosh, yes. And you may wonder, well, how can that be? That doesn't sound right. Some people might be thinking that. But, you know, Monique, I think you're right. I think that there is just a startling preponderance of negative thoughts. And then if you think about the socialization that we need to go through, the way that we're raised, and what do our parents tend to say when we're in our terrible twos?
Uh-huh.
They set boundaries. They say no. And sometimes they add some more to it, you know, because they don't want us to keep doing whatever we're doing. They want to make sure that we know why. So they give us a lot of boundaries, a lot of, and I don't think they mean to do this, but there's a lot of internalization that goes on just with our basic socialization in school, in institutions, at home, where we start feeling that we aren't good enough and that we want, what we want is never ours, or that it's, life is just really hard and then you die. Just really negative kinds of beliefs. And the truth about these beliefs is that they're basically thought forms, which is that's just the idea of this little energetic thing that zooms around inside of us, and it can either help us construct what we're creating and help us feel good about it, or it can kind of bring us down. So reversing that negative self-talk is first a process of noticing what it is that these little negative thoughts might be when we're thinking about what it is we wish to create, what we're dreaming of. And you can start writing those things down. In fact, I recommend that. That's an exercise in the book Reality Shifts, When Consciousness Changes the Physical World. Uh-huh. You can start by writing down the things that you notice that you're thinking inside your head. Just make a list of those things. That might be, I never have enough time. That's one that a lot of us feel. You could write that right down on a piece of paper. And then the exercise has to do with flipping that belief around. The idea here is that the opposite of that belief is equally valid, really. There's no reason that we have to just force our life to fit to that constraint that we never have enough time. In fact, it's kind of, you know, it's a very difficult constraint to work with. So if we flip that thought, I never have enough time, around to be, I always have enough time to do exactly what needs to be done, you can feel a sense of relief just to think that thought. And then to put it in writing is even better. And then to make it an affirmation, ooh, that's getting really good. And then put it somewhere where you can see it and say it aloud every day on the refrigerator, whatever. Then things start turning around. So that's a way to get some customized affirmations for yourself, things that can directly address some of the negativity that you may inadvertently have internalized. Most of us don't do it on purpose. You know, it's not like we set out to be very negative people.
Yes, Thursday is my negative day. Thank you very much. No, all days are positive. Okay, so let's move down to number 5 on our top 10 ways to shift reality, and that's energize yourself. Now, how do we kick up our energy?
Well, we talked a little bit about meditation earlier, and that is such a fabulous way to get energized. Now, I also mentioned there are lots of ways to meditate. Some people don't like to just sit still. Obviously, there are benefits of exercise. So if you do exercises, then that's going to be good for you. Good nutrition is good. Getting enough sleep is good. Just really basic ways to keep yourself energized. And, you know, taking supplements, vitamins, and so forth. Whatever it is that can help you feel energized, staying away from negative people. You know, there's a whole lot to this. And a lot of it becomes really clear when you start meditating. That's when I get wonderful ideas, things that, you know, when I come out of the meditation, I feel like, oh my gosh, I just need to do thus and thus, you know, change my diet or do some more exercise, whatever. These things come to mind. And so that's why I like to put meditation first, because it seems like the key to access all the others. But basically, reality shifts are powered by our emotions. And so we manifest things that we enjoy when we're feeling joyous. And obviously, we're going to feel better and more joyful when we take the time to kind of clear the clutter of our minds and get rid of all that stress. So I'd start with meditation, and then, of course, follow common sense about making sure that we get enough sleep. And some people don't know when they're getting enough, but one good rule for that is just if you can start waking up without the alarm clock and without feeling tired or you know, stressed right from the start, then that's a good indicator that you've gotten enough sleep.
Okay. Well, I'll pay more attention to that myself. Okay, so number 4 on our top 10 ways to shift reality is revise your assumptions.
Ooh, I love this one. Of course, it has to do with physics again. So,
okay.
You always, I like to do that. I like to link these things to physics because partly, of course, I've got that background in physics, but also because I like things to be practical. That's one of the best ways to realize that this stuff is real. It's not just woo-woo. It's not airy-fairy, but we are able to have an effect on our world just because we're observing it. That is one of the assumptions that has come out of physics, and in the past, it used to be that we actually believed that there was such a thing as an impartial observer. I think that phrase is still hanging around in the English lexicon to some degree, and you may hear it once in a while.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you the truth, though. Physicists now know there is no such thing. There is no such thing as an impartial observer. And as mind-blowing as that might seem, what's happened is that in the world of quantum physics, I think I mentioned this earlier, when physicists are looking at particles or these little quantum things like a photon or an electron, and they want to know, is it a wave, is it a particle? Depending on the way they set the experiment up and the way that they're observing, in other words, the way that they're collecting data on what's happening, they get different results. So that's huge. It means that we have effects on our life. It means that the way that we watch things and the way that we feel about them changes them. And it's a huge effect. There are three other observations, assumptions.
Uh-huh.
Observer is one of them. The other one that comes straight out of physics is that we can only predict with the probabilities of things occurring. Once again, at the quantum level, there is no such thing as perfect precision where we can play with quantum particles like they're billiard balls. Physicists love to do that.
Uh-huh.
Most of the classes that I had at UC Berkeley would always start with, we assume that there is, we can ignore gravity. Most of the regular physics 101 classes just start with that. And they deal with forces and masses and acceleration, that kind of thing. Now, on the quantum scale, there's no more perfect pool table kinds of physics experiments. You can't do something where you just ping one electron off another and you always know exactly what happens, because you're totally in the realm of probability. These little things pretty much, they move within sort of a range, but there's no certainty, and that really fits real life too. So one of our assumptions, when we're doing things in our lives, we tend to think black and white. So many of us, we tend to think that we can be perfectly logical and we always know the outcome.
Uh-huh.
That does not fit what's really happening at the smallest scale. And we can benefit from learning from that probability model and knowing that, okay, it may be unlikely that we're going to get what we're wishing for, but there is a chance of it. And because there's a chance, it can happen. And so that's a way to start turning the tide on a person's life when they're feeling like they're up against impossible odds or a difficult situation. Things can change in a moment. They can change against all odds. And I'll just real quick talk about the other two. Another couple of, and these are all covered in the book.
Uh-huh.
One is that matter is the only thing that matters. A lot of people get into that kind of mistaken thinking, because that's not true. Actually, everything is vibration. Everything is energy. So it's not just what you see in front of you that matters. If your cup looks half full, not to worry, because the energy of fullness is right there. And things, like I said earlier, can really be very different than what they might seem. The energy is what drives everything. That's once again from quantum physics.
Uh-huh.
That whole concept of material realism is very limited. It's very old school physics. And the last assumption that has completely been tossed out, I hope, is that our thoughts and feelings have only local effects. In other words, we can only do things that are right here in front of us. In other words, it's that same, it's very linked to that observer effect. We have that concept of the impartial observer, the scientist in the white lab coat, working in a little experimental apparatus, and only what's happening in that room can affect it. Well, that's not true at all, and physicists know that for a fact. The story I told you about the quantum particles that change spin simultaneously,
uh-huh,
miles apart, oh yes, we have non-local effects. That is a spooky action at a distance, and there's been a lot of confirmation for it. I've got articles posted on my website that describe experiments in the medical community where people pray for others and definitely see some real non-local healing. So it's so exciting.
It is. It is extremely exciting. I want to remind the folks that we are speaking with Sophia Sue Larson. You can still call in and speak to her if you wish. The number is 877-876-5227. Cynthia, number three on the 10 ways to shift reality is view the scientific studies. Now, you've talked all this time about not getting so much into the physics and quantum physics, and now you're telling us to go there?
Well, just to this point, it's a good segue from that last thing I was mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
If you have some studies that are out there, yes, I actually do recommend it, because it can help to put our logical, rational minds a little bit at ease. We do have that quality. We like to have explanations. We like to know what's going on. We like to have mechanisms. We like to have theories. Even if those things are just crutches or just something that we can cling to, and it may not be the full truth, but it gives us something, That's part of our nature. And so there is some benefit in looking at the studies and noticing that when people tell you, you know, these things are impossible, it's just you can't just do wishful thinking and have what you want come true. It's wonderful to know that for every study that says that that may not be true, or I'm not sure that there are that many studies actually that show that that's not true. Most of the ones that I've seen show the opposite, but it really does help to counter that sort of social prevalent way of thinking that that just because you want something and wish for it, you can't get it. I think there's so much, it's like this huge cosmic mass consciousness that's very oppressive to so many of us, and we can feel the weight of it. And so one way to break out is to fortify ourselves with some facts that support the opposite viewpoints. And some of those would be these studies I was starting to mention earlier, such as the one that was done in 1988 by cardiologist Randolph Byrd, with B-Y-R-D. But he published his results in the Southern Medical Journal, and he took double-blind experiments to show that people with coronary problems at San Francisco General Hospital had tremendous improvement when people were praying for them. And then there were lots of subsequent studies. Elizabeth Targ did her studies at San Francisco, California Pacific Medical Center in 1998. Well, it was published in Western Journal of Medicine. And that was a small-scale study with AIDS patients, but once again, very conclusive results showing that people that were prayed for, and this time with a wide variety of people doing that prayer, the effects were quite noticeable. And there are other studies. Now, there was one done, people may be thinking, okay, well, that sounds great, and these are older studies. What about that Templeton Foundation study that was published just this last year? Good question. That one got a lot of publicity because it was $1 million, I think maybe even more than $1 million was spent on it, and apparently it turned up what seems to be negative results for this non-local effect, this prayer at a distance business, because apparently people that were prayed for seemed to even do worse than those that weren't. Okay, now anytime you see a result like that is interesting, and you should definitely, that should catch your eye, and you should look a little bit closer. So when we look a little bit closer at the experimental design, and I haven't seen the actual paper yet, but I have seen the summaries of it, and it seems to be that some of what was happening there, unfortunately, was there was a little bit of design error, because when people were being prayed for, the doctors and so forth, the people would tell them that, and they would use some words which had to do with exactly what was not intended. So when you're working with someone to heal, you need to talk about health, not disease. And the people in this study, unfortunately, were talking about things like disease and what would not be happening. But the very fact that they mentioned those things is most unfortunate. And it's definitely, that's the reason we're reversing our thinking, reversing all those beliefs. Everything that I'm talking about this evening is so important so that we can keep it clean. And so when that study came out with its very strange results that people who knew they were being prayed for actually did worse, that's because of the way that the wording was put forth to them. That's my take on it anyway, not having read the actual study itself.
So it was like people were praying for the disease as opposed to it dissipating.
Yeah, those words just are most unfortunate. Yes. So that's good. I'm glad that that's mentioned, actually, because when you're doing any kind of affirmation or wish manifestation, that sort of thing, keep it really positive. Keep it focused on exactly what you wish for. Like peace in the Middle East, some people, they don't like that word peace. They prefer a word like harmonious relations, because then it doesn't bring into mind exactly the opposite of what we're hoping for.
Right.
So this is really good. Good to know.
Okay. Well, you know, you said peace in the Middle East, and number two on our list of top 10 is appreciate. Now, how does appreciation come into all of this?
Wow. Well, we talked a little bit about feelings earlier, but there's one that's probably the king of them all, the queen of them all, the goddess of them all, and that is gratitude and appreciation. And I think a lot of people that have been keeping journals are aware of gratitude journals. It's something that Oprah talks about on her show, and it's really caught on in the last 10 years or so. But that's because there's really a lot of truth to it, and what happens when you start focusing on what you're grateful for, it disables and it derails that negative system that just tends to run rampant otherwise, unchecked within us. You know, all those negative thoughts we mentioned earlier. And the best way to disable it, the best way to just bring it to a screeching halt and put an end to the negativity is to start being positive. Because you can't smile and frown at the same time. You can't have that feeling of, like, how very blessed you are and at the same time feel cursed. So this is the way to reverse a curse. It's the way to pull out of the tailspin. And so we could look at the Middle East, for example, and be really grateful that, it's, you know, that there is some communication happening. Okay, maybe we might like to see even better communication, but we look at the cup as being half full, not half empty.
Right.
We are grateful for the fact that rulers of the world are gathering, and all of them are pretty much recommending a ceasefire on both sides and not worrying about who's right, but just bringing it into it. So these are the kinds of things we can do to keep that attitude of gratitude, too, because it does have the power to change the world. And the way it has that power is, once again, disabling the negativity and getting rid of the fear, you know, bringing the love in. And when you're smiling, when you're feeling grateful and blessed, that's a healing force.
I'm right there with you. I truly believe it's important. And that brings us to number one on our top 10 ways to shift reality, which is pay attention.
Yes, and wow. I think this one just has to do with being lucid in everyday life. You know, there's a whole section in Reality Shifts, the book, about lucid living.
Uh-huh.
And I save it for the end of the book because, really, this is the first thing on the list of 10 things, and it's a good thing to start doing, but sometimes we think we're paying attention and we're missing things. I think most of us who are parents know that we've had that experience where we really think, I know what's going on. Yep, our child comes up and they're just tugging on us and trying to get our attention. And we kind of, I've done this, I tend to dismiss it. Like, yes, I know that. Yes, I know that. Well, very often there is something that we actually, at least in my case, I really didn't know. And that can be rather startling to find out that out of the mouths of babes comes some magnificent truth, which might not be what I wanted to hear, but it's exactly what I needed to know.
Right.
And so being aware is just, getting to that place of present living, you know, in this moment now, right here, right now, being really present, being really non-judgmental. I think a lot of us resist being in the present moment because what happens is our monkey minds chatter, and if we come to the present moment, then we judge ourselves. Like, well, is this where you are? That's all you've got. Oh, my goodness. You know, that's not enough. By this point, how old are you anyway? You should have kids. You should have a car. You should have two homes. You should be vacationing in Paris. You know, and this chatter gets going. It's a huge problem.
Yeah, well, we should all over ourselves, and we shouldn't. we should just take ourselves as we are because we're all on our path, aren't we?
Yeah, and part of that, exactly, I love that. And being in that present moment, part of it is really being clear and conscious and alert and observing, because what happens when you observe non-judgmentally is that these things that come to us are gifts, and we're able to start taking advantage of opportunities and not being afraid of everything that comes at us, but noticing that so much of what comes our way is coming in peace, it's coming in joy, it's coming as a new, wonderful opportunity. And most of all, of course, you're talking to me tonight. I loved what you said, the goddess of reality.
Well, you are.
So this whole thing of pay attention, when you start paying attention, you really can see that miracles are happening. You can see that things are spontaneously changing with your thoughts and feelings. You can see that if you're in a rush, you need to get to the doctor in 10 minutes and you didn't give yourself enough time to drive there, you can have a reality shift. You can drive there. And you can just intend that there will be exactly enough time to get there.
Well, you know what? That exact thing happened to me this morning. I had to take someone to the doctor who was running late, and we had to travel a bit of a distance to get there. And, you know, I was a little bit worried, and I just gave it over, and I said, no, I'm going to get there on time. And sitting through rush hour traffic on 880, anybody in Northern California, you know, that's like a nightmare. I got there 2 minutes early.
Wow.
And I should have been, in all reality, about 15 minutes late. And there was no way I could speed this morning. I'm usually like 90 going real fast, but there's no way I could speed.
Right.
But but I just made up my mind I'm getting there on time, and it happened.
That's right. Well, I'm so glad that you had that experience, because that's, and it's so funny, of course, you know, I would be tuning in exactly to that one example. There are so many examples. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
I pick exactly the one that's happened to you.
Yeah, well, we just have to, as you said, pay attention. You know, it was interesting when I was thinking about, you know, what you and I are going to talk about, because we're friends and we talk all the time. And I came across the top 10 on your website, so folks do check that out, please. She's got a lot of great information at realityshifters.com. You know, I read the top 10, and I said, well, should I do it backwards or do it, you know, from 1 to 10? And I said, no, let's start with 10, because with me, to me anyway, everything builds upon everything else to be able to pay attention.
That's right. And that's why I end the book on that note, because I agree with you. It's where we start, but it's also where we need to bring it right back to that,
right,
this present moment, to being really present, really aware. And then that word lucid, we talk about lucid dreams, but lucid living is so important. The idea with a lucid dream is that we're able to be aware of the fact that we're dreaming. That same concept is true in our waking life.
Uh-huh.
Now, Gurdjieff once said that we are all like sleepwalking. We're all kind of hallucinating in the sense that we're a little bit, hypnotized by this thing that we call reality. And we're in a daze. We're just sort of going about habitually, doing things that we always do, saying things we always say, not really giving things much authentic, real, true, present moment thought. And so the best way to reality shift is to get really present, really aware, really lucid, and to just know that you are dreaming this dream of life.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that. Cynthia, why don't you give out your contact information, let people know how you work with people, and, of course, where to find all three of your books and your CD.
Yes, my website, again, is www.realityshifters.com, and I've got a free monthly newsletter. There's a lot of free material there on the website. And then I also do life coaching on a donation basis. I really believe in making things available for people of all walks of life. So I do need to make a living, so that's why I have a suggested donation there. But basically, I like to work with people. So, and the spiritual life coaching, of course, it relates to reality shifting and all these things. I've written a book about auras, and so I like to tune into people's energy and can definitely work with the chakras and so forth, and helping with meditation, manifestations, and all of that. And the best way to schedule an appointment is through the website, emailing me, letting me know what times are good for you. And I've got clients around the world, so we always need to check the time zone to figure out what's going to work best. And then sometimes I actually make public appearances, mostly in California, occasionally out of state, but not too much. I've still got young daughters here. So as they get older, I'll be traveling more. So many people keep asking, when can you come see me?
the children just need to grow.
Yeah.
Well, Cynthia, thanks so much for being my guest today. I really appreciate it. And you'll have to come back soon, okay?
I'd love to.
Okay, thank you. I'll be back next week with author and talk show host Kevin Smith. If you want more information about any of my guests or to find out about my personal appearances, log on to either one of my websites, www.healing-visions.com or www.walkingwithspirit.net. Or you can always give me a call at 888-240-6057. And remember that the master knows that he or she is always a student, whereas a student still hopes to someday be a master. Many blessings, light, and love to all. Namaste.